Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast, an intelligent, imaginative, hospitable exploration of ideas that matter in contemporary life. And now, here's your host, Dick Staub.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another encore presentation of The Dick Staub Show, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers about their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with Dr. John Stackhouse, author of Humble Apologetics. Well, it's Dick Staub back with you. Our guest is John Stackhouse. He's professor of theology and culture at Regent College right up the street here, kind of, in Vancouver. And his book is Humble Apologetics, published by Oxford. I remember when you told me that you were writing this book, and when you told me the title, knowing what I know about you and about you, the nature of your work, and that title alone, I just felt this is going to be an important piece of work. This is going to be something we need to take seriously. And the first part of the book does a lot of the kind of dealing with ideas and issues that are important for us. The last part of the book on communication is very, very practical. Mm-hmm. It's the rubber meets the road. What are some basic things that we learn? You talk in communication that we need to think about some of the principles involved here, and you talk about word flesh, grace, truth, apologetics as an act of love. What's going on with that kind of, mm-hmm. some people could call it attention. Other people would say it's a complementary nature of what we do.
Well, the very thing we're trying to communicate, Dick, is, of course, is a whole way of life in Jesus Christ. And so the medium and the message have to line up here. And if our message is restricted only to the medium of words and only to the medium of argumentative words, then we're literally trying to talk about something that's much bigger than the medium allows. Apologetics, I think, needs to be recast as I think it has been understood from the Bible forward, as everything we do in word and deed that brings honor to God and adds more plausibility to the gospel. And I think it's crucial in this day as in every day that people see good deeds, that people hear good words. And beyond that, I think as far as our good deeds, that people see Christians as promoting what is beautiful, what is thoughtful, what is moral, what is noble. And that package together is about the life well lived in Jesus Christ. Yeah. That's what we're trying to commend.
Wow. Yeah, the wholeness, a completeness. You talk about being audience specific in three different kinds of appeal that we can make: a subjective appeal, evidentiary and reason, and Christian worldview. Talk a little bit about each of those and the blend of them in most people's apologetic.
I think we can talk firstly about how our own experience as Christians, our experience of God and Christ from the very basic testimony pattern of evangelicals, I think that is powerful for some people. Say, this is what's happened to me, and if you like that too, let's talk about it. Some people need more than that, or they have particular questions that keep them from entering into that experience. So we can move to evidences and reasons and say, here are some good questions, and here are some at least plausible answers. Let's remember that millions and millions of Christians across cultural lines find this faith to make sense to them. So there are good answers out there somewhere. Yeah. It's not as if there's a new question that's stumped all those millions of Christians. We just have to find it.
Yeah.
But finally, I think the appeal has to be to the Christian worldview, the Christian way of being in the world. And we offer that, say, here as a kind of package, here's what it means to be a Christian. And let's see how it means to be a Buddhist, or let's see how it means to be a secular humanist, or whoever it is we're speaking to. And then say, well, let's compare. Let's imaginatively enter your world and see what it's like to be in your mode. And then let's imaginatively enter into the Christian worldview. And then let's see which one makes the most sense, not just intellectually, but in the sense of living out life. Now, here's where I think we need to understand something that not all apologetics books make clear. And that is that even when you get to that level, it's not as if you're going to win the day. Because Christianity offers people certain kinds of good things. But some people don't want those good things. They don't want to be reconciled to God and Jesus. They don't want to live the Christian moral life. And I think at that point, there's nothing Christian apologetics can do. You can't argue somebody into wanting something else.
What about, there are certain people that believe that the Bible is the revealed word of God and it has a power in itself, and so it's very important to consistently quote Bible verses and document what you're saying biblically. you know, in general, what do you think about that? And more specifically, in light of the fact that we have a biblically illiterate culture that doesn't take the Bible that seriously anyway, how does that color the way we view the Bible itself?
Well, I've actually gone on a bit of a trajectory about that, Dick. I moved away from that for quite a while, thinking that, yeah, there's nothing magic about the Bible. The Bible, strictly speaking now as a theologian, the Bible doesn't have any power in itself. The power that the Bible has is the same power that anything has, and that's from God.
Yes.
And so it's God who uses the written word of God to speak to people. So there's nothing magic about quoting the Bible. On the other hand, God is pleased to use the Bible in special ways, as he doesn't use any other book. And so I think that I've come around to saying there are times in which the Bible, it does have a power that God gives us. And so I think strategic and faithful and appropriate quoting of the Bible often is the word of life for people.
I was just thinking about an interview I just did with a guy that was an atheist, and he got dragged into a church, and he heard and he was an intellectual philosopher. He heard the phrase, no one will come to the kingdom except as a little child. And he thought, well, what if the nature of this transaction is actually like a parent who has to demonstrate love and a child has to open themselves to receive it, and not just intellectual inquiry, went home that night, engaged in that openness, and had the appearance of a vision, visage in his room that night. It was an intellectual brought to the faith through a simple little phrase that opened up a world of intellectual inquiry. Who would have thought that phrase would do that? There's a certain element of mystery about all of our communication transactions that God inhabits, and we simply try to be faithful in a given situation to what we know and understand we should do. And then, as you say, there's nothing more we can do. You have a wonderful section on guidelines for apologetic conversations and listening, offering, don't demand, teaching, then preaching, clarifying questions, reading the Bible, praying, and so forth. Very, very practical chapter. You also talk about other modes, and you talk about architecture and literature and different ways that people can engage in apologetics. Just briefly touch on that.
I think that everything we do says something about who we are and what we value. And I think people pick those signs up. They notice the way we dress. They notice what we drive. They notice how we live. They notice how we furnish our churches if they ever come inside. They notice what's there and what's not there. And what makes up our life, in fact, communicates the kind of life we have. And so Christianity and Christian proclamation isn't just about words pointing to something else in heaven. It is also a welcoming in to the kind of life we're now living. So we need to attend to that. We need to attend to the messages we're giving. If, in fact, we're trying to call people to serve Jesus, but our whole material lifestyle points to mammon, well, no wonder they don't take the message seriously.
Oh, man, there's a world of off-ramps on every one of the words that John says that I'd love to pursue, but time is of the essence. You end with a concluding comment about humble.
Mm-hmm.
Humble apologetics. Why is the word humble such a nice compliment to the word apologetics?
Well, I think we need to be humble in several respects, Dick. I think we need to be epistemologically humble. That is, when it comes to the philosophy of knowledge, how much we claim for our own human knowledge, I think we have to be humble about that and say, I'm just a person. I'm just a guy. I'm just me. And this is all I can give you is what I have. And secondly, I think we need to be spiritually humble to realize that we can't convert anybody. Only God is going to do the converting. And that will then let us be rhetorically humble. We won't talk louder and claim more than we should. But I think it also puts us humbly before God and says, you know, God's called us to offer this good news to other people. And so it's also a mark of humility to steadfastly keep proclaiming and keep living this great news and not letting the culture intimidate us.
Wow. Well, folks, let me suggest a companion volume. You pick up Humble Apologetics by John Stackhouse from Oxford Press. And then the companion volume would be reading the Gospels and looking at Jesus. And he was a humble apologist, though he was God in human form. There was an amazing ability to ask questions and to allow people the freedom to disagree. He modeled the very things we've been talking about. The book is Humble Apologetics, published by Oxford, John Stackhouse. Thank you. This concludes our conversation with Dr. John Stackhouse. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.